You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, Jolan Shrew, peace and long life. Welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts, your Star Trek podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your host, Derek, the Star Trek dude, back after a few months off of the show. And we decided to bring it back to talk Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 1, and then Star Trek Discovery, Season 3. 23 straight weeks of Star Trek. Greg will be coming back and joining me for the Discovery Season 3 conversations, but I brought back two recurring, longtime guest hosts and friends of the show, Zach. Hello, Zach.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Welcome back, buddy.
Yeah, good to be here.
And my co-host on Screen Heroes and in life, Ray.
Aww.
Hey.
Happy one-year anniversary, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a marriage. We've been together a lot longer, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About five and a half years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be us for these 10 episodes of Red Shirts and Runabouts. So we're going to review all 10 episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks, starting with episode 1, Second Contact. That's what we're here for tonight. Before we kind of kick things off, though, since the show's been on a break and I've got some guest hosts with us, I thought it would be fun to talk a little bit about who we are on a personal level, why we're here to talk about Star Trek, and, you know, maybe some news or any information that has come out about Star Trek recently. And then we'll jump into the review. I do want to say this, I think, is the very first live streamed episode of Red Shirts and Runabouts. Mm-hmm. We've never done it live before. And we are streaming live right now in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/Red Shirts and Runabouts. It's just a Star Trek forum. It's not just for the podcast. We do news and memes. We do polls and tournaments. We're building our ultimate Starfleet crew right now, so you can hop in and get some voting in for that before it's all over. We've got a few rounds left, I think 3 or 4 rounds left, so be sure to join us for that. I've tweeted the links out at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter if you want to follow us out there as well. So all that good stuff out of the way, well, I guess we're going to be doing this live hopefully each week. We're going to try and record Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, which would be 7 p.m. Pacific time. So that way we have time to watch the new episode and then talk about it with it fresh in our minds. So you can chat with us while we record in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Join us.
Whew, that was a lot of talking. All right. So
you're talking good.
I'm going to start with Zach just because he doesn't talk on the network as much as Ray and I do. Zach, tell people a little bit about who you are. Not just Star Trek, like a little bit about you, how you know us or whatever, and go.
Yeah, so my name is Zach. I am a nerd. I am a writer. I am a single dad to two little girls. And yeah, I've been a Trek fan for a long time. I've seen all the shows. I first was exposed to Star Trek when I was a kid and I saw the original series movies. It wasn't until later that I went back and watched through the series itself and all of the movies and whatnot. But yeah, and I've known Derek since we were in elementary school.
Do you know what this month marks for us?
Is this the month? Oh my gosh.
We have now known each other for 25 years.
We have. And I'm sad that the pandemic is happening, because I know last year we were talking about doing some big thing between you and me and our other friends that we've known for all this whole time.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I've got a gift in mind that I'm going to try and get you guys, but I was hoping to physically give it to you. So I'm like stalling because I don't want to just like ship it to your houses.
Well, like, definitely stall, because this will eventually be over and we'll have some sort of gathering together that'll be like the 20, 25 and a half or 26th reunion.
Save it for the 50.
Right, right. I'll eventually get to meet your child once it's born.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, yes, here's hoping. It's weird. Like I commented before on your digital baby shower that, you know, outside of Ray standing up on the baby shower call, I've not actually seen her pregnant. So it's going to be this weird thing when I meet your kids and it's like, oh, Ray, I never saw you pregnant. Like I've seen, like I saw Jill pregnant, for example, when, you know, when she was having Charlie. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're living in weird times, but yeah, we've known each other for a while. We're Star Trek fans and fellow nerds. We've seen some of these movies together. We've watched a lot of these premieres together back when, you know, it was safe to do so. So yeah, it's good to be here and hanging out with you guys, even digitally.
Even digitally. All right, Ray. Now you've done, you know, like 300 episodes of podcasts at this point, so you know the drill.
Yes. All right. So I'm Siren Ray, Ray for short. I am Derek's wife and I helped him get the HPN off the ground. Now I'm just kind of, you know, dead weight. But
wow.
Not even.
Oh. I'm his host on Screen Heroes. I've guest hosted on Red Shirts many a time. I've been on some other podcasts on the network. I am a cosplayer. I work in eyeballs. Let's see, what else do I do? I'm 8 months pregnant and with Derek's child.
Yes.
Yeah. In case that was a question.
You know.
Filling in the gaps for any new viewers.
Right, of course. And I mean that's about it about me. I got into Trek more recently. It was always in kind of the periphery or background of my life, but I wasn't a fan really as a kid. I would always defend it. I was more of a comic book nerd as a kid. So, you know, if anybody made fun of Star Trek nerds, I'd be like, hey, cool it. That's not okay. But definitely living and being with Derek has, you know, exploded the Trek fandom. We're currently and very adamantly on my part watching DS9.
Yes.
And I'm in love.
Arguably my favorite of the entire franchise.
So I'm worried because this is like the first one that she's really watching like straight through. Yeah, especially as an adult, and I'm worried that like it's setting the bar a little high, especially like the second half of DS9. You know, sets the bar pretty high. Like every episode we'll finish and she's like, "That was a good one." Like, yeah, you've said that about like the last 10 episodes. Like they're all just, you know, one after another, just really great as the series progresses. And I'm worried we're going to move on to like Voyager, and like season one of Voyager is kind of rough.
Yeah, a little bit. And DS9 was, not to get off on a tangent, but it was so far ahead of its time. Like it prompted a lot of serialized stuff that we're now seeing that is more standard. Mm-hmm. But for back then, for them to be telling a series, because you guys are later in the series, so mm-hmm. for them to be telling a story that was a franchise, you know, within a franchise that charted the progress of a really complicated war, that was unheard of in the 90s.
Yeah, and I mean, it's dark, it's complex. Most of the characters are gray. They're not just good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, they all do good things from time to time, and then they do some not so good things from time to time.
Right. Gene Roddenberry is rolling around in his grave. Which we'll talk about tonight, I'm sure, too.
Oh, yeah, probably. I absolutely love and adore the aspects of storylines connecting. Not a lot is dropped, and I appreciate that. I was just talking on Facebook with some friends yesterday about how, even though Jurassic Park is one of my favorite films. There's a lot of plot points that are just dropped, and it annoys me. So I appreciate that they did that, but I also feel like they're still bringing in new stuff, and they're not over-focusing on the war.
Right. You see a very human side of the war, where there's this big epic struggle happening on, and yet the story week to week still focuses on the human beings that are going through everything and being challenged and changed by their circumstances.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're like halfway through season six at this point, give or take. I forget exactly which episode we're on, but
yeah.
So we're nearing some pretty big stuff. That's getting ready to happen. Worf and Zia just got married. So I think that was the last episode we watched. Was that one actually. So there you go. So for me, if you're new to the show, welcome. Welcome to Red Shirts and Runabouts. I've hosted the show from the beginning. This is episode 96. I think I've missed one, maybe two episodes. Ironically, I missed our most popular episode ever, which was our first review of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Why is that the most popular? That's surprising.
I think it's because it's not really a controversial topic. Everyone just has fun talking about it because it is, you know, of what it is, right? Like we can love the camping scenes, you know, and them toasting marshmallows, right? Uh-huh. But we can also make fun of Scotty hitting his head on the bulkhead or, you know, any number of things in that movie that's just hilarious.
Superfluous decks on the ship that don't actually exist.
Like, yeah, I mean, right, like, you know, the jetpack boots and, you know, all those types of things. So I think it's just something that everyone can get on board with.
Captain Kirk is climbing a mountain. Why is he climbing a mountain?
Because he's in love.
He wants to make love to the mountain.
So we've been doing this for a long time. We took a little bit of a break in the spring after Star Trek Picard season one. And, you know, we're back. We're back now to celebrate these 23 weeks of Trek. Speaking of which, so what does that mean? So as of today, August 6th, 2020, Star Trek Lower Decks, the new animated series from CBS All Access, has premiered. It'll run 10 episodes, 10 weeks consecutively. It is a half-hour cartoon, very similar to the animated series, but because it is a streaming service, there's some flexibility on the length. So the first episode was 26 minutes and change, for example. Once that is over, on October 15th, Star Trek Discovery Season 3 premieres. So if you haven't caught up on Discovery, it's going to be a very different season. Spoiler alert for Discovery, but there was a big-time jump that occurred at the end of Season 2. So they have now moved to the 32nd century, which is the farthest in the future that we've ever had a show set or a movie set, which is pretty cool. They have a ton of freedom. I think one of the major complaints about Discovery was that they were very boxed in canon-wise with what they could and could not do. Now they have, as much freedom as I think you could possibly have at this point to bring in new species, new technologies, new designs without anybody being able to say that's not canon, because there is no longer canon at this point in the timeline. It's all new. We got a couple looks at season three so far, including a new comm badge, insignia badge. I guess we don't know if it works as a communicator or not yet, if we're splitting hairs. But guys, what do you think so far about season three? Do you like where it's headed? Do you like the new comm badge design? Or are you looking forward to anything in particular?
Oh, anybody. Goodness.
Anybody.
I didn't want to be the first one to jump in.
Okay, so let's see. I am looking forward to Discovery. I think the three of us discussed this when it premiered that we were really hoping they would go after Nemesis and not somewhere else. So this is a chance to do some cool things, be in a different timeline. I don't know exactly when this takes place, but I just know that they're a little more free in this case. The trailers have been pretty awesome. I am actually looking forward to the inclusion of more aliens. I always love more aliens. And the fun Apocalypse look should be really cool too.
Yeah, I don't have any opinions on the comm badge, if it is a comm badge. It's not super exciting to me, but it's not offensive. I don't have a strong opinion on the badge itself. But I am, like you said, I am very much excited about the time frame. I'm looking forward to seeing this unexplored region of Trek history, as it were. I don't know if it's appropriate to call it history at this point, but I do like, you get the sense from the trailers that things are not great for the Federation. Like the Federation flag, which, you know, includes all of the different planets. It's much more sparse. There's only a few lights. There's only a few little dots on that flag. And that is concerning, but I think it's going to make for some good storytelling. Like, we've reached a point in the future where, and you know, based on even what we saw in Picard and what we gather from Lower Decks, even a little bit, it would make sense that the Enterprise was not going to be, or not the Enterprise, the Federation was not going to be, you know, this perfect utopia forever, that there were going to be forces or things that were going to challenge that. And I know one of the big complaints about Trek now from old school fans is that it's too dark, but I'm looking forward to seeing a hopeful Trek mindset come out of some pretty hopeless situations. And I think, honestly, whether it's Star Trek or any good sci-fi, I think that that's a marker of the quality, is that it speaks to the time that we're in. And right now we're in a pretty difficult time where a lot of people feel hopeless, and I like that Trek is speaking to that. So I'm looking forward to some relevant Star Trek content, and I trust that it will include a vein of hopefulness.
So I think the flag is a red herring.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, there's a point during, like, the main TNG DS9 era where there's, like, 1,000 planets in the Federation, and that flag doesn't have 1,000 stars on it. So I don't think there was ever, other than the 3 brighter stars that represent the founding planets of the Federation, I don't think it was ever meant to be a one-to-one. So I think it's a minimalist redesign of the flag that is a red herring, and that's not actually pointing towards the state of the Federation at all.
Okay.
I think they've done a really specific job to hide any sense of what anything looks like in this time period. We haven't seen any ships. We haven't seen interiors of ships. Or the only piece of technology that we've seen is that hand cannon type device that we see a very diverse group of, I'm assuming, Starfleet officers using in one shot. So, like, we really don't know much. And I think that that's very on purpose. And the Federation is just looks substantially different from what we're used to. But I don't think it's as down in the dumps as the trailers may lead you to believe. It's a ruse.
We'll find out in 10 weeks, I guess.
Yes. The only other real big piece of Trek news is Star Trek Picard is currently confirmed for 2021 for season 2, which is pretty cool.
It's also really ballsy of them to say 2021 when we're currently living in a pandemic where filming things safely is not a possibility. So,
well, mm-hmm. I do want to say that as of right now, the only thing to premiere on time is Lower Decks.
Right. But it's an animated feature. It's animated, so that helps.
So, I mean, but Discovery's season 1 and season 2 were both delayed. Picard was also delayed.
It was.
Lower Decks is the only show to actually come out in the window that they had originally stated. Take that as a positive trend, if you'd like. I don't really know if it is or not. So kudos to that team.
A positive trend, or just a reflection of the nature of animated media versus filmed media?
Possibly. That's definitely a real possibility. And keep in mind, in order to be faithful to 2021, it just has to premiere in 2021.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
So, you know, we still have potentially, you know, 16, 17 months before we could see season 2. But it is an active project that they're, you know, serious on pushing forward with, as as is Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which, if you didn't know, is the newest announced show, which will follow Anson Mount, Rebecca Romijn, and Ethan Peck's characters of Pike, Una, number one, and Spock aboard the Enterprise prior to Kirk.
It works.
You what?
Fan pressure, it works.
Fan pressure. I mean, I don't know if it was fan pressure as much as just fan delightment, right?
Right.
We just loved it, and I think the studio, the actors wanted to do it. The fans wanted to see them do it. I think the studio. I stand firmly that you don't build that Enterprise bridge set to not keep using it. That was
too detailed,
too high quality for a TV show to be shown in that small capacity. They intended to use it, but they just weren't going to say anything in case people didn't like how any of that turned out.
But there was a demand. There was demand. I mean, the casting, all three of them were cast well. I'm excited to see more of them. Anson, I'm a straight man, but Anson Mount is gorgeous. I have no problem saying that at all.
I'm more of a Rebecca Romijn fan, but hey, you know, whatever.
I like Rebecca Romijn, but like Anson Mount, I
yeah.
Ray, where do you fall? Are you an Ethan Peck lady?
I am. How graphic can we get on here?
I mean, it's look, we're not PG, but I like to keep it family friendly if possible.
I would like to be in an Ethan Peck Anson Mount sandwich.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. I guess actually we do have one more piece of news, and that's we do know now the official title of the Nickelodeon Star Trek show, which we had a basic synopsis for. We have a little more detail on that now. It's called Star Trek Prodigy. It will be a CGI cartoon. A lot of people are assuming it'll look a lot like the more modern Ninja Turtles cartoon on Nickelodeon as far as the animation style. And it follows a group of adolescents who find a derelict, downed Starfleet vessel. They fix it up and go on crazy adventures together. Its main demographic is under the age of 10.
It sounds a bit like, do you remember watching Space Cases when we were a kid on Nickelodeon?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's dated.
It is. It's very dated. But this feels like the premise feels very... I did, too. The one girl had an imaginary friend that became a real character later.
That was Jewel State.
It was. It was Jewel State of Firefly flame, fame. Yeah, like she... Yeah. I held the flame in my heart for her.
I'm fine with it.
But she was I mean, that whole I enjoyed the whole show, and that whole show in and of itself was very, in hindsight, derivative of Trek. So
how do you guys feel about a children's cartoon for Star Trek specifically designed for young kids?
Well, both of you got into Star Trek a lot younger than I did. So I feel like a good chunk of me kind of missed out. But this is a chance for, you know, my own daughter to grow up with a Star Trek aimed just at her. And while I totally can't wait for her to see the other stuff, it does bring up some ethical questions that I'm not necessarily looking forward to answering at a young age, but I'm hoping this is a nice bridge, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Spock die and get resurrected by the age of like 5, you know?
Right. We're seasoned veterans who have seen some shit, so. But
yeah, I mean, Tasha died quite young in my life, quite early on in my life, you know.
I agree with Ray, though. Like, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old daughter, and I don't necessarily enjoy all of the shows that they enjoy watching. I watch with them because I want to be involved in the media they're consuming, and I want to be an active participant in their life. But I relish that there will be Star Trek aimed at them. Like, and I hope that they enjoy it more than me. I hope it's a Star Trek where I walk away going, you know, it's not my thing, but my kids really love it. And if that's the case, then that makes me happy because I love Star Trek as a franchise. I think it is bigger than any one show or movie. And I love the fact that my girls might get to grow up in a, you know, a Roddenberry informed utopian mindset that encourages them for, you know, through some dark times. So
fair enough. I'm looking forward to it. I think it sounds fun. I am curious, you know, some of the details. When does it take place, for example? Are these adolescents, are they aliens, are they humans, are they a mixture of different species?
I'm sure it'll be a blend, you know, just of just diversity. Curious.
I will say it won't be the easiest thing for us to watch because it's a Nickelodeon show. It'll not be on CBS All Access for at least a year, according to the early reports. So that means you're gonna have to watch it through Nickelodeon or rent it through, I'm assuming, Amazon Prime Video will have it for rent like it does most shows. Or, you know, maybe it'll have a deal with Netflix or something, you know, like Avatar. I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see. But that's the only thing that I'm a little bummed about, is that it just won't be part of anything I'm currently subscribed to.
And we're already subscribed to a lot, so that is kind of a kick in the nuts.
So much, yeah. And, like, don't get me wrong, like, I am very happy that this is a thing that's happening. It would just be nice for it to be included on CBS All Access with the rest of Trek. That's all. Because I saw CBS All Access as an opportunity, especially with the Viacom deal going through now, for Star Trek to all come back under one roof. And, you know, it's a bit of a bummer to see that that's not exactly happening.
Yeah.
Streaming rights are so confusing and often very polarizing. So I have nothing good to say about it.
Yeah, that's fair. We talk about that type of stuff on Screen Heroes all the time because it's a common conversation. You can listen to our whole rant about Mulan in this week's episode of Screen Heroes. So
check that out.
I think that's it, though, for news. So what we're going to do here, since we've never done this live before, people, if you're watching this video in our Facebook group at some point, you don't know necessarily that we do this. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back from that break, we will be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Episode 1, Second Contact. And don't worry, we'll provide a spoiler warning before we dive into the details so you can catch the beginning of it if you haven't quite seen that yet. So we will be right back, everybody. All right, so we are back. We are talking Star Trek Lower Decks, Episode 1, Second Contact. I'm your host, Derek. I've got my guest host with me, Ray and Zach. And let's talk a bit about what Lower Decks is. So first, Star Trek Lower Decks is a prime canon timeline Star Trek series. It takes place 7 years after Star Trek Nemesis, which puts it between Star Trek Nemesis and Star Trek Picard Season 1. It is an animated series. It is from the creator of Rick and Morty and has a focus on the Lower Decks characters. So if you've ever seen the Star Trek episode Lower Decks from the Next Generation, it's those types of characters. These are the people that do more of the day-to-day work. They're not bridge staff, they're not senior staff, they're not chiefs of anything. They, you know, do a lot of the Star Trek makes jokes about, you know, you'll end up on sanitation duty. This is what those people do every day when they're doing their jobs right. You know what I mean? So they're even referred to as Lower Decks. That's what these people are. So the show comes from Mike McMahon.
It's a tough name. Yeah,
I apologize. I'm really awful with names. I just am. I try. It stars the voice cast of Tawny Newsom, Jack Quaid, Noelle Wells, Eugene Cordero, Don Lewis, Jerry O'Connell, and several others. Phil Lamar, if you watch cartoons, you will definitely recognize his voice. He's done some of my favorite stuff. And so that's just some of the main voice cast. Focuses on four primary characters: Ensign Mariner, Boimler, Tendi, and Rutherford. Those are the main four that the show follows. We have two humans, a man and a woman. We have an Orion woman, and we have a cyborg male. He's a new cyborg, though. So it's a half-hour show, like I said earlier, and it is a comedy, which I know kind of rub some people the wrong way. So, before we dive into spoilers, Ray, what is your spoiler-free take on episode one, Second Contact?
Okay, I'm not entirely sure if the series is going to be for me or not. I have no issue with the comedy thing because I think at this point Star Trek has evolved and could fit into a myriad of genres or be adapted to it. But some of the humor is a little, incredibly in your face and on the nose, and there's not much subtlety to anything. So we'll see how it goes on. The first episode had a couple of really hilarious spots in it that I laughed at completely. So hopefully I'll just, you know, continue to enjoy it. It'll only get better from here. But if it doesn't and it's not for me, I'm not going to be upset. I still have a lot of Trek to get through.
Zach, what about you?
I loved it. I you know, it's only one episode, but I will say I really enjoyed it. I feel like it has a lot of promise. No spoilers here. I don't know if you guys watched the Ready Room companion to this episode.
I did.
Yeah. And one of the things I liked about it is they talked that they were very intentional that they were wanting to derive from the Next Generation and that universe. And they spoke very directly about how the main difference between Lower Decks and the Next Generation, aside from animation versus live action, was the fact that they just focused on the B plot, you know, and there was some really funny stuff in the Next Generation. There was some really silly, weird stuff that happened. It was just usually the B plot. And the same can be said even of a little bit of DS9, but more of maybe Voyager. And I just like that we're bringing the B plot to the forefront. It is just, it's a unique take on Trek. I liked the characters and their relationships enough to say fairly confidently that I think I'm going to enjoy it. I'm also a Rick and Morty fan, which I hesitate to say. Like, I feel like that's one of those shows that you have to preface, like, I'm a decently general, you know, functioning human being.
I've never yelled at a McDonald's worker before.
Right. So, like, there are a lot of these fandoms lately where you have to be embarrassed. Like, I like Star Wars, but I'm not a man baby who's going to cry about the new movies.
Right.
They're not for me. So I enjoy Rick and Morty a lot. I think it's smart. And I think I'm among the Rick and Morty fans that understand that Rick is not a hero you should idolize. and I still enjoy the show. So I will say, yeah, like, as a Rick and Morty fan, as a Star Trek fan, that they've piqued my interest with this first episode. I am very much on board. I like what they're doing. I see what they're doing. And I think it's going to be a fun ride.
So I've never seen Rick and Morty at all. So I didn't really, like, when people kept saying it's just going to be like Rick and Morty, I don't know what that really means necessarily. I overall liked it. I agree with Ray that a lot of the humor is very on the nose. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate that the humor is not at the expense of the franchise. Like, they're not poking fun at Star Trek. They're poking fun at stuff inside of Star Trek. And I think there is a difference. Yes. So I do appreciate that. I think that Mike and everybody involved in the writer's room, and Barry Kelly, who was the director on this episode, clearly knows Star Trek, especially TNG. Like, there's just no question. The style is kind of cool. I like the animation style. I like the design of the ship, and I like the designs of the interiors and all of these different things. I think it looks good. I think that's really all I can say before diving into spoilers, except for, like, my one, like, nitpicky canon thing that I'm sure is just maybe not worth talking about. Is, like, I like the uniforms a lot. I think they
look... Oh, yeah, they look cool.
They look great. I don't understand how they fit in, though, with, like, the timeline of uniforms, because we already have the TNG movie era uniforms that DS9 gets in the second half of its run. That's a big departure from the previous uniforms, and then they get back to the colors with Picard. And so I'm wondering if maybe this is the explanation here, is that when the war was really over with the Dominion, right? And you fought the Dominion, you fought the Borg, you fought the Sona, you fought the Romulans, or at least the Remans, with Shinzon. The Federation was like, these are the worst luck uniforms that we've ever had as an organization, so we're just going to retire those and go back to the tried and true colors that we had during primarily peacetime. And that's how we got to this. What do you think? Is that good headcanon?
It works for me. I also, yeah. I knew that would be one of your complaints as I was watching this pilot episode. I was like, yep, Derek's going to have some thoughts on this. and it's valid. It's a valid concern. But also part of me wonders, because we've never seen a ship that wasn't as important as the Enterprise. You see in all the other shows, you see a lot of other, you know, you see sister ships, but they're all pretty, you know, they're high ranking, doing important business. Whereas the Cerritos is very different. And so this also made me wonder, like, okay, like, are the uniforms generally uniform throughout, or like, do lower ranking ships have their own uniform to kind of signify, like, yeah, you're a bridge crew, but you're not Enterprise bridge crew. You're not the best of the best.
So that is a Discovery concept, because the Enterprise and Discovery got the new uniforms before the Constitution class ships got them before the other ships.
Right. That's why I was thinking this.
It's an interesting thought. It is. In the later Star Trek shows, like in the 90s, it seems like everybody is wearing the exact same stuff, right? Like, look at Voyager. Voyager is wearing the exact same uniforms as DS9, even though those started off as space station uniforms. Then of course you have the confusion in Generations, where people are wearing two different kinds of uniforms throughout. And that's being nice, because that's ignoring some of the cheaper uniforms that are used for more background characters. But I don't want to dwell on that. So let's do our spoiler warning so we can dive into the nitty gritty. So if you haven't seen it yet, this is your spoiler warning. Let's dive in, guys. Where do you want to start? It can be a character, a plot point, a design point. Is there something that stuck out to you that you just have to talk about? I don't want to monopolize the conversation.
Well, I say we talk about the four main characters.
Do it.
I'm not entirely sure if they have them quite figured out yet, because it seemed like they had one personality trait apiece. And that was it. The, you know, Ensign Mariner is loud and obnoxious and overconfident. And Ensign Bulmer is nerve-wracked, anxious.
Nervous,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, eager for advancement. Tendi is over the top and super excited, ball of energy. And then Rutherford is just a cyborg. So I really hate that one, because, you know, it's just futuristic for, and this is the black character. But he also had my favorite storyline throughout the whole thing. So I'm really hoping they get more development. It is just one episode, but they seemed very flat.
So let's talk about Rutherford for a second. I think he's a good one to focus on, because I liked the angle that they took, because he's not just a cyborg. He's a new cyborg, and it's a Vulcan implant that keeps trying to suppress his emotions. And so I feel like
that's not good for his dating life.
Is not. And I feel like that plants the seeds for a lot of possible storytelling, because there's what happened.
Yeah.
Right. Why did he get a Vulcan device? And then how is he coping with that device? And how is he now different than he was before? And I think that has a lot of opportunity that I'm really excited to see.
Yeah, I'm interested in that as well. And as a fan of The Good Place, I love that he's voiced by Pillboy.
Yes. I know. How great is that?
Aw, dip.
So I like that a lot. I thought that was a really cool kind of trait. I keep saying his name wrong.
Boimler.
There it is.
Yeah.
Boimler. He kind of feels like the stereotypical sitcom main straight guy, right?
Yeah. He does.
Who, like, he drives the story. He's your focal point, but he's, like, the least interesting of the main characters, right? Mm-hmm. Like Seinfeld, for example, right?
Right.
The three actors surrounding Jerry are better actors than Jerry, but it's Jerry's show.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah.
I think that that's what we have here.
I agree.
You know, he clearly, like, he wants to be the best of the best, but he's very ill-prepared, I think, mm-hmm. is the problem. He's very green. Whereas, like, Mariner, she, I mean, I guess we don't know how long she's been an ensign. Did that come up? But, like, she's been on 5 ships, she said?
It doesn't. And so I agree with Ray. Everyone's pretty one-dimensional. The only small area I would disagree in is that Mariner, I feel like by the end of the episode, we have a fairly somewhat vague three-dimensional shape of who she is. Tendi, absolutely. She's just, I feel like we're almost like forced to, empathize with Tendi because she's new to the ship and we're new viewers and we're supposed to be viewing the world through her eyes and her optimism. Whereas by the end of the episode, I felt like Mariner, she had some depth to her. Like, you realize that she has been on important missions and for whatever reason she's been demoted. And then you figure out that, like, both of her parents are, or her mom's a captain and her dad's an admiral. And she's kind of a hard ass who could, you know, could follow the rules and do good things, but she just has her own idea. And like, I really loved her little bit in this episode. My favorite thing about this episode, arguably, was the character moment where she said, look, I was here when we did first contact on my last ship, and these are farmers. They don't have time to wait for Federation bureaucracy to give them what they need, and so I'm giving them what they need. And I think that her, you know, Roddenberry might roll over in his grave at the thought of Federation officers, you know, not getting along or following command, but I also think that maybe Roddenberry would be sympathetic to her morals and her values and her ability to stand up for the underdog and say, no, these are people who have needs and I see that they have needs and I've got the means to supply that. So I'm going to do it whether or not my command says it's okay. And I'm team Mariner hardcore by the end of this episode as a result.
Ray, anything you want to add to any of that?
No, I'm the one that brought it up.
Okay.
I said what I said.
That's fine. Well, a lot's been said since then, so I just wanted to give you an opportunity to add on. But I'm with you there. I like Mariner a lot. I'm not surprised by the parent element in here. Mm-hmm. I had a hunch that there was something. I had not guessed parent, but I had a hunch there was something else going on that she hadn't said. And it makes perfect sense at this point that she's probably in Starfleet because her parents made her go to Starfleet. And while she's very good and capable and excels at it, it's not what she wants.
Right.
That's not where her motives lie. That's not her passion. And so her passion, I guess, is being a bit more of an independent force, doing what she thinks is the right thing to do.
But I do think her love of justice and her sense of righteousness is a very stark thing, which is ironic. It's a Starfleet that they uphold in theory, but not always in practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's fair. We see the main heroes of our shows break protocol to help people on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Right,
but they're painted as the heroes because they're in charge, mm-hmm. right? So they get to make those decisions. And this is the first time we really, it's probably not the first time, let's be fair here, but it's, you know, this time we get to see a very low ranking non-senior staff member do something like this. And you'd think there would be some consequences. I think maybe that's the only failing that this really has, is that narratively speaking, nobody's really paying attention. And maybe that's because the Cerritos isn't some super important vessel, and, you know, maybe the staff on board are not the best of the best, right? Maybe Captain Freeman is, you know, only a mediocre captain or something along those lines, but nobody really knows what's going on. Like, Boimler shows up without a uniform and there's no explanation. Like, he doesn't have to explain why or what happened. Right. Supplies for the farmers go missing. Nobody notices they go missing or reports that they go missing. That kind of thing, like, that's a little bit problematic. And maybe it's just because of the length of the episode. They have to squeeze a lot into 26 minutes. especially as a pilot, because they have to introduce all of these characters plus all of the side characters because they're the higher ups.
Right. Right. I don't want to judge it too harshly because it is a pilot and they've got a pilot is a lot of pressure. But I do think that them being lower decks as a premise holds a lot of potential for future stories, because like you said, this isn't the flagship of the Federation. No one gives a shit about the Cerritos is the impression that we get. Even the command crew, it's like, yeah, they're the command crew for a reason, but they're not the Enterprise. Like, you know, these are not people who, would have any threat of taking over any Enterprise positions anytime soon. So there's a storytelling potential in my mind that, like, when you look at the lower decks, you have the potential to see characters who are going to do the right thing and do a very Trek thing and grow, not because they're being watched, not because they're important, but because it's what they want to do. And so, like, and that's integrity. Integrity is what you do when others aren't watching. And I have a hunch that in this season of Lower Decks, we're going to see these characters do the right thing and grow, and not because they think they're going to get anything out of it, but because it's an ideal that they value and hold on to.
That's fair. I like that. So Tendi, aside from her personality, she is Orion. And that was something that was more or less assumed based on her design, but it was confirmed in this skin episode based on, you know, the holodeck scene. So she's our first Orion in Starfleet in the prime timeline. I'm going to throw that caveat out there because of
the that Kelvin we're aware films, of.
Right, that we ever get to see. There is one in the Kelvin films, Uhura's roommate. But how do you guys feel about finally seeing an Orion in Starfleet? I mean, we hardly get to see them anywhere, right? They're a very limited exposure group. But I'm really excited to finally see more aliens in more normal roles.
Yes, absolutely. So the Orions tend to be some of my favorite, and I think it's because of how underrepresented they are, as well as the fact that green-skinned people I just seem to be drawn to. So I'm super excited for that, and I'm really hoping I warm up to Tendi a lot. The overexcited achiever is not something I usually identify with, but truly and completely at the end of the episode when she like exclaims that she got to hold a heart, like that would have been me. Since I work in the medical field, I come home sometimes and I get really excited and I'm like, I got to inject somebody today, and like I'm so pumped about it. So that is exactly how I would feel in that situation. I would not be upset about all the gunk on me. I'd be like, heart, I held a heart. So that was her redeeming quality for me.
Zach, what about you?
I don't know. I enjoyed the whole thing. I related, like I said, I related most to Mariner and her whole situation. And I think what most stuck with me is just the character relationships. I liked, I had to check IMDb again. I liked Rutherford. I wanted to call him Pillboy. I liked Rutherford's whole date situation, and then how like both of them are like not phased. They're like, yeah, like, you know, this whole thing's happening, but they're still continuing their date, and it's fine because they're used to it. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I related most to Mariner. I thought she was the most fleshed out. And end of this episode, I was most excited about the character relationships, and I did not like, you know, Boimler at all, really, but I liked that Mariner decided to take him on as a student, if you will, and like her enthusiasm, like it was a cool character moment for her to see, like, her like, oh, I have this enthusiasm, I can share all this stuff with you, and then goes on to like rattle off all this like hardcore Trek Easter egg and knowledge that we're all like, yes, I know what she's talking about.
lots of name drops.
Yeah. So Mariner is my favorite, and I think I'm just really excited to see these relationships evolve, and it's a pilot, so I give it some leniency for its shortcomings, but I do think that there's a lot of potential here, and I'm excited to see what they do and how they grow, because that's what Trek is all about. It's growth.
So I really like Tendi, I think, because I was like that before the corporate world like beat me down for a decade.
Sweet innocent Derek.
So like when I was 23 and I was just starting out, everything was exciting and fun, and I had all of these goals and hopes and dreams for my career and everything. And every time I got to touch a new technology or get involved in a new kind of project or initiative, it was always really exciting. And so I relate to that a lot. And kind of forgot that, you know, how I used to look at a lot of those situations compared to now, literally a decade later. So
you forgot how joy feels.
in the context of work, it's definitely fewer and far between than when I started.
That's fair.
Right.
I'm just messing with you.
It's just not the same. And so like I like seeing that brightness in her personality for her job and her passion. And I feel like if I had been in the Star Trek universe and could have gone the path of Starfleet and went through the academy, I would feel the exact same way she does when I got assigned to my first ship. You know, that's what I would be like. I would be extremely giddy and excited and just, you know, ready to go at thrusters on full. So I get that a lot. I do think it's interesting. So if you look at the Star Trek shows, the non-human character is usually the most human character, right? The one that the audience is supposed to connect with, right? It's the Spock, it's Data, it's the Dr. EMH or Tuvok. It's, you know, that's just the way it goes. And now in this show, it's the same exact thing. The audience perspective is the one non-human of the main four.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure is very much on purpose. Especially after hearing everything Mike had to say about his love for TNG and the inspirations from TNG. I'm sure that's exactly by design. And I like that. I think that's a good thing. I think it's a formula that has worked for over 50 years, and there's a reason it works. So so that's kind of a fun thing I noted. So we have the main like senior staff and bridge crew, so to speak. We don't get a ton from them, obviously, but did anybody stand out to you, good or bad, that you think is worth noting from this first episode?
I think they're all supposed to be just a little bit annoying so that you like the Lower Decks crew a bit better. I keep wanting to call the doctor a Tabaxi and not a Katian. But, you know, the doctor was a grizzly jerk. The captain was way too focused on her daughter instead of, you know, the zombie outbreak. One guy is just straight up ready to destroy stuff, and you know, like he's kind of like
Lieutenant Shax, the Bajoran.
Yeah, he's just insane. And then you have the very similar looking to Chris Pine womanizer guy who brings the rage virus on board. So
Commander Ransom.
I feel like all of them are supposed to be a little bit unlikable.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. I think you're right. I think they're also supposed to be more one-dimensional.
Yeah,
whereas I think that with the main four Lower Deckers that we're gonna get them fleshed out. But yes. I think it's the reverse, right? We're going to see, you know, maybe some of the senior staff and bridge crew get fleshed out over time, but it's going to take a long time because they're the B and C story now.
Right.
Right. So right. I think that's definitely the case. Like Shax, for example, like he's kind of just like a less controlled Worf, right? Mm-hmm. He wants to fight. He wants to battle. He wants to go, go, go. And, you know, that's a little.
I like that he's Bajoran. We haven't seen a lot of Bajorans for working for Starfleet.
Yeah,
I absolutely adore that twice in 26 minutes he suggested to blow up the warp core.
Like, yes.
Like, what
that's all
are
you need
doing,
to know about
sir?
That character.
Exactly. Yeah. That tells you everything you need to know about him.
Like, and given the time frame, I kind of assume he is like a freedom fighter. Like, maybe he worked under Kira during the resistance.
That's true. He could be.
I mean, based on his age, he definitely would have been around for the Cardassian occupation as well as the Dominion War. So you would think he was involved. And he's seen some stuff. You know, he's got some battle damage and things like that. So I agree. We so rarely get to see Bajorans. Outside of DS9, there's basically none.
Yeah.
You know, you have Ro Lauren, who was supposed to go to DS9. She was the original idea for Kira. And then, like, that's it. That's your Bajoran time for the day. You know, kind of like how you really only get to see Andorians in Enterprise.
Right.
You know, it's the same kind of concept. And so one advantage that this show has, because it's animated, is you could just throw in different aliens all the time because you don't have to worry about makeup. You don't have to worry about the time that takes or the money that takes or the consistency.
That was one of my favorite parts of the show. It's looking in the background to see who all they have. Like, they have Bullians on the ship. They have Andorians on the ship. It was just crazy how diverse it was. I think it's easily the most diverse Trek that we've seen.
I think it's also very telling that we've only ever seen Cadians on the animated shows.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would just be so difficult to do that practically.
Well, the two girls that Kirk sleeps with in the Kelvin timeline are Cadian. You don't know it at first, and then all of a sudden their tails poke up from the bed.
I do think we also see one in Star Trek V. Right. That water pool game that they're playing in Star Trek V that they throw the woman onto. I think she's supposed to be, but we don't really get a great look, and there could be other species that look similar. I don't know if that's a confirmed thing or not. But yeah, I mean, and there's some other stuff in here too. So, and it's a very fleeting moment that, like, I swear you have to, like, really need to look for, especially if you want it to be a bad thing. But there's a person when Tindy is first arriving on the ship in the shuttle bay, there is an officer who appears to be a Sikh or something like that. I'm not super familiar. It's a very quick view. I didn't get a good look. And so that's something very interesting because we don't ever see that in Star Trek either. Any other, you know, religions being from Earth being represented. You know, Bajorans are obviously very religious. There's other species that are very religious, and there's references to religion in Star Trek, but we rarely get to see any of the other Earth religions represented that aren't just like the standard Christian religion. So that was kind of cool, as fleeting as it was. Hopefully we see more of stuff like that, but it gives a lot of flexibility being animated.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was cool. Like, I mean, this we saw the first Benzite in recent memory too, just as a brief, like, he was behind one of the protagonists for a minute, and like, but that was cool.
Yeah, great. I forgot about that. I've always loved them. I mean, you basically you see them in TNG a little bit, and that's all I remember. So maybe they show up in DS9 and I'm forgetting, but very
not that I remember.
One at a time kind of situation. It's never like you see a group of them.
Right. You know. It's a lot of prosthetics, and you've got that whole like front thing that like brings up the little whatever that is, breathing apparatus or translate. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but
it's for breathing.
Okay.
It's for breathing. But yeah, I mean, we got to see Bullions, and there's going to be more Bullions. I've always loved the Bullions. Every Bullion that they've ever had in live action has always just been great and just a joy. And I've always wanted more. So, you know, that's a really great opportunity. Now, Ray, I know this isn't really your thing and you may not have a strong opinion, but how do you feel about the ship?
I knew you were going to ask me about ships. Oh, my God. Okay.
The USS Cerritos, California class starship.
So, full confession, I always get asked about the ships and if I have an opinion on them or not. And so I have been looking at the Eagle Moss website to get a better understanding of the differences between the ship, because when they have a, you know, 10 second appearance that's not even consecutive, I have no idea. But I want to answer your questions. I want to know these things for you. First of all, the design of it looks really cool. I think like my largest issue is that with the Federation ships, they all have that dish and nacelle kind of look to it. So I can easily be like, but it's the same.
It's called the saucer section.
Oh, okay.
Or the primary hull.
And this is where I leave, guys, because I just said I don't know these things.
I'm just trying to help.
And I know this is going to sound really, really girly and stupid, but I liked the yellow coloring on it because it just separated it from the Enterprise. And it was a small detail, but on the saucer, it had a nice little ring of yellow, and it looked really polished and nice, and I don't know why that made all the difference for me, but it did. So that's what I've got. No more ship questions, thank you.
So first I just want to say liking the color yellow isn't really girly or manly.
I'm more pretty neutral that I was focused on color, and you know why is that
girly?
Because I do that with cars too, and I'm like, I like the color.
But people who are passionate about those things care about that, the aesthetic as well.
Okay.
Most of the time when someone's talking about starships, it's the aesthetic of the starship that we're talking about.
Right.
You know, and so I don't think that that can be girly or manly. I think it's a spaceship.
I've met Star Trek fans. I know a
few. Have you?
Yes, I know a few that even listen to this podcast who's going to listen to this episode and be like, she doesn't know shit about ships. Like, why are you talking to her?
So, well, then they can shut the fuck up.
It's not everybody's thing. It's not. So I really like the idea of the Cerritos for a lot of reasons. My main reason for liking it is because of what it is. So we talked this whole time, it's the second contact vessel, right? It's not the flagship. It is straight up a kitbash design of a starship. And I love that through and through. And if you don't know what that is, back in the day, before they had CGI models for ships, they would build the models, practical effects, right? And in order to do that, they would do what they called kitbashing, where they would take kits from multiple sources or multiple copies of a kit and put parts together that were not really intended originally to go together. Extra nacelles or moving a saucer underneath the secondary hull or whatever, right? And you see that a ton in TNG. You see it a good amount in DS9. And it kind of started to fade away as the ships became CGI at that point. But it was a cost-cutting technique. You could literally go out as someone working on the production and buy an Excelsior model and buy five Excelsior models and put the pieces together, right? Was a thing that you could just do and then shoot that and have that be in the episode. That's a thing that used to happen. And that's what this is, right? This is straight up, it's a kit bash. You've got the Galaxy class style saucer section. The secondary hull is a different kind of design. It's stretched out, which is something that a lot of the kit bashes would do by putting different kinds of parts together. And it just looks a little off. It's a little silly. Right, it's a ship you would have seen in the background that was destroyed in Wolf 359 or something like that. I don't know. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I love the ships. I love that they did a good job of they talked about this in the Ready Room, of making a show that is animated, but it takes place in a very real world. And I like that they paid attention to detail as far as the aesthetic, and it sounds like a lot of the animators were watching Next Gen as they were working, which is really cool. I love the design. It's unique. It's funny to me, like, and I don't know if this is an intentional thought or if I'm just overthinking, because the latter is absolutely possible. For a show called The Lower Decks, the nacelles are literally lower than they are on any other ship that we've seen, really. You know, especially the Enterprise. They're very lofty and high, but the nacelles are, you know, right there at the bottom. So yeah, I'm with Ray. I like the color. I like the design. I liked it, and I love that the interior feels like I'm walking into a TNG season 8 type set. Like there's a uniformity in Starfleet design, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you there. Something that you touched on is something that they talked about in the episode of The Ready Room that covered this, which is all of the design, the shot design, the cinematography was designed as if it was a physical space. So the camera is where you could put a camera if it had been a physical ship to make it look more like the way TNG was shot. It's very deliberate. If you didn't watch TNG, you probably didn't notice anything weird and it wouldn't have mattered. But if you are a big TNG fan, there's just so many similarities in the style of the way the show is shot. And I think that's really clever. Mike McMahon also did the TNG season 8 Twitter account, which I didn't know until like 2 or 3 days ago. That was one of the very first Twitter accounts I ever followed way back in 2008 on my very first account. And yeah. I had, like, no idea that he, like, who this guy was. And so, like, that's just awesome that it's the same guy. Like, I like when passionate fans, Trekkies, get to actually work on Star Trek. It's pretty amazing.
It's awesome, and it's cool to see that. And it's also, like, it's an inspiration to me personally because, I mean, a lot of us listening are probably working jobs that maybe we don't give a shit about, but it pays the bills. And would love to be doing something that we're passionate about. And so, like, you know, every time that you make a podcast or make a blog post or do something that is in line with what you care about, it could turn into a thing. And that's kind of the Cinderella story that I think a lot of us who are disillusioned with our jobs need to hear. Like, here's this guy, like, he is a nerd and he's a Star Trek fan and he had a very successful Twitter account. And that led him to his job with Rick and Morty, which led to a job working on an actual Star Trek show. And yeah, that's really inspiring.
Mm-hmm. One plot I want to see, I'm just staring at the design of the Cerritos. I want to see the ship do a saucer separation because, like, basically the entire ship is the saucer section, right? It's got 11 decks. That's where everybody is. But have, like, a handful of our lower deckers doing maintenance down below in, like, a nacelle when the ship separates. And they're stuck on this part of the ship having to figure out how to get it somewhere or land it or something like that. I think could be a really fun theme for an episode.
I agree.
So speaking of theme, how'd you guys like the opening and the theme song? Because I know that's always a point of conversation with Trekkies.
I'm on the fence about it for two reasons. First, the music is pretty, but it didn't grab me. I need to listen to it a little bit more. It did not grab me, not even as much as the Discovery one did,
right.
Which is a bit of a shame because I've always loved the music. The actual sequence itself is funny. It's pretty hilarious and it's pretty beautiful. I'm worried it's a little too silly at times because there's a few things that happen that just seem like incompetence rather than anything else going on. And
right.
I don't know that that's great, but I get what they were going for.
I adore the little alien that's like sucking on exhaust.
Yeah.
So funny.
Well, and that reminded me, and maybe it was a TNG episode, but that reminded me of, like, wasn't there like a parasitic space whale episode? Was that the Scotty episode?
No, they mention it in Relics because Jordy's explaining it to him because they had to sour the milk.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, I saw that and I immediately thought that was a TNG episode, wasn't it? We didn't see it as graphically as this, but
I think it's a different alien, but yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it is, but it's a similar concept. But yeah, I liked the intro. I thought it was visually very pretty. I'm with you, like, honestly, but looking back, the Discovery intro to me was pretty underwhelming for the first few episodes. Like, it took a while for me to get attached to it. It took a while for me to get attached to just Discovery as a show in general. But I love the theme song Discovery now more that I'd heard it a few times. And so Lower Decks, the song itself, you know, it was fine. I felt like it was intentionally derivative of a lot of the other themes that we've heard. It was, you know, so I don't have a strong opinion about it yet, but I'm willing to give it a few more episodes. I think this would be worth bringing up here in a few weeks to see how we still feel about the theme song.
Yep, I agree. Mm-hmm. Ray, do you have any thoughts about it?
I really enjoy it so far. I think it's a good theme song. I'm not quite sure it works for this show. I honestly, like, I tell you that my least favorite part about DS9 is the theme song doesn't seem to really fit with the tone of the show. I think this would have been better for DS9. Maybe Enterprise. Who knows?
That's a fair point.
Or you Discovery.
Don't like, you don't like Faith of the Heart?
Star Trek doesn't need lyrics. It really doesn't.
It doesn't. And I don't hate that show or that theme song as much as most, but it's not the strongest by any stretch.
No. I mean, Discovery is not great either.
It's really understated. It's very mm-hmm. subtle. Almost too subtle. Picard's, though, on the other hand, talking about Modern Trek, the Picard theme song is beautiful and gripping, and like it is like a painfully beautiful opening theme song. So it's not just that I don't like new Trek themes, it's that, you know, only one of them in recent memory has really gripped me to date.
Right.
That's fair. Well, you know, it's been a long road getting through this podcast. So I think it is time to call it a night. So we're gonna sign off, but we will be back next week to review episode 2, Envoy. We're also going to do it live in our Facebook group. So be sure to join us at 9 p.m. Central Time. So that's 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Facebook.com/groups/redshirts and runabouts. Join us live. You can chat during the show. We did this one ad hoc, so now you know it's coming every Thursday while the show is on air. Ray, if people want to talk to you about DS9 and Orion's, or something completely unrelated to Star Trek, how might people find you?
I am at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And Zach, if people want to talk to you about why the Enterprise theme song is the best theme song of all of the Star Trek series, how can they reach out to you?
I am on Twitter at AvengerZS for Zach's story. And that is also my, you can find me on Instagram there as well.
Perfect. And I am at the Star Trek Dude on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can come talk to me about Star Trek, sci-fi movies, whatever. You can catch Ray and I on Screen Heroes, the film podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. This next week we are anniversary reviewing Scott Pilgrim versus the World for its 10th anniversary.
Oh shit.
Very excited about that. We've been doing lots of anniversary reviews while the movie theaters are closed and movies are not releasing. So you can catch a lot of retro type look back reviews that we've been doing there.
Hey, we're living in an apocalypse, so we could use some nostalgia. So
we've got that. That we definitely have. So
Screen Heroes brings the nostalgia.
We do. We definitely do. And we are Red Shirts and Runabouts. So you can find us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter. You can find us at heroespodcasts.com. We're part of the Heroes Podcast Network. You can subscribe to our show on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, and more. Leave us a review. If you leave us a review, let us know. I'll read that review on the show as long as it's not completely inappropriate. So there you have it. It doesn't even have to be a positive review. If you hate me, tell me, I'll still read it on here, and then I'll explain why, you know, you're wrong. But, you know, you still can have that incorrect opinion. But yeah, please check us out. Join our Facebook group. We're doing the Ultimate Starfleet Crew Tournament. We're going to do more stuff like that. We might even try doing some alien crew building, and we do lots of fun stuff in there. So come talk Star Trek with us. We will be back next week. Live long and prosper.